The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yeah, listening to Dr. Myberg's update just puts in such stark contrast two different worlds.
Mm.
We are literally going into almost a total normalization that's been announced that within the next 2 weeks, mask wearing will no longer be required, not indoors and not outdoors. The last few restrictions are due to be lifted. The official numbers show that there are something like 500 people at the moment who are active with COVID-19, including those members of our youth who have yet to be vaccinated. But we understand that starting at the end of May, the 12 to 15-year-olds will begin their vaccination program, having received the authorization for the vaccine from the FDA in the US. So that's going to be going ahead. And I can honestly say that it's a blessing that we were in this situation, particularly during the Gaza conflict
period. Yeah, I thought a lot about that.
You can just imagine people gathering together in bomb shelters, all in very close proximity with each other at a moment's notice, being woken up in the middle of the night and running to bomb shelters. Masks are kind of the last things that are on people's minds. And if we were having to deal with the effects of the pandemic during that period, it would have been a very, very difficult situation for us. So a real blessing that we managed to come out of the most serious parts of the pandemic before we went into the conflict.
Absolutely right. But unfortunately, the ceasefire might be in existence, but terrorism has not been put on hold. A stabbing attack carried out in Jerusalem yesterday.
Right. So, unfortunately, I mean, we ended yesterday by saying that we really wanted to try and continue the discussion about why those protests are taking place around the world. And before I talk about the stabbing, I just want to open things up and say I would dearly love to hear from anybody who went to the protests, whether they be Jewish, whether they be Muslim, whether they be neither. I'd really love to hear from somebody who went along to the protest, who felt the need to go along, as to why they felt that it was important to protest. And perhaps one of the listeners are out there and would be willing to write in and explain to, you know, express their views about what the importance of the protest was. I saw so many of these protests, not only in South Africa, but indeed around the world. I'm still struggling to understand what the nature is of the protest, why people felt the need to protest. I'd be very, very eager to hear. But unfortunately, as you say, Howard, the ceasefire might be in place. The ceasefire went into place early hours of Friday morning. Already during the day on Friday, there were altercations in Jerusalem on the Temple Mount. Police were forced to use crowd control, tear gas, rubber bullets in order to control crowds on the Temple Mount. Ironically, the Mufti of Jerusalem, who is somebody who's considered to be quite close to the Palestinian Authority leadership, was physically removed from the Temple Mount, from the Al-Aqsa Mosque, as a result of chanting crowds who were opposed to him being there. Very, very, very unnerving scenes that took place in Jerusalem. Quite a lot of violence. And unfortunately, that didn't end there, because yesterday there was a stabbing incident. A young teenager attacked a person at a bus stop, at a light rail stop, actually, quite near to the police headquarters in Jerusalem on Rehov Chaim Bar-Lev. When that person was stabbed by the teenager, a soldier who was in very, very close vicinity came along to try to help the person who had been attacked. And that soldier was also stabbed and was left actually with a knife in his back. And there were some quite strange pictures that went out showing this young soldier with blood streaming from a wound in his back and the knife still lodged in his back. Then the border police, who were quite nearby, simply shot the attacker dead on the spot. Turns out to be a 16-year-old high school student who felt the need to carry out this terror attack. Two Israelis injured, one quite seriously. The knife had to be removed only when he went to hospital. It took some time to extract the blade from his back. We hope that both of them will recover. But we are very, very sad at the fact that a 16-year-old had to be shot dead in order to prevent further attack on innocent civilians in the city of Jerusalem. And it just shows to what extent the tensions are running high across the area, but particularly in Jerusalem. And it kind of leads me on to raise this whole issue about the internal riots that took place in Israel during the time of the conflict and just before it, where we saw Israeli Arabs, you know, rioting, civil unrest between Arabs and Jews across the country. And it raises a very, very worrying aspect, which unfortunately we don't have a great deal of time to talk about right now, but is certainly worthy of a further discussion, because this civil unrest, this conflict that seems to be increasing between Arab and Jewish citizens of Israel, is certainly a cause for great concern.
Absolutely right. And but we are seeing a lot of people around the world suddenly standing up and saying, hold on a minute, anti-Semitism is getting out of control. We're seeing this in Israel, of course, as we always have done, but it has spread around the world. Hopefully now that people are taking responsibility, Mark Ruffalo being one of them. So he tweeted this morning that that he's been incorrect in how he has portrayed it. The exact words of his tweets are, and I'm just going to it, I have reflected and wanted to apologize for posts during the recent Israel-Hamas fighting that suggested that Israel is committing genocide. It is not accurate. It is inflammatory, disrespectful, and is being used to justify anti-Semitism here and abroad. Now is the time to avoid hyperbole. Actually, it's not really true. I mean, it was time to avoid hyperbole then. Not now, but at least he has acknowledged finally that, that this type of language, this use of genocide and all sorts of things is just inflammatory and incorrect. It's just simply a lie.
I think that the strong language is certainly out of place. I also think that support for Hamas in the way that it's come over the period of this conflict is disconcerting to me, because, you know, as I said earlier, I just don't get it. I don't understand why people are supporting Hamas, what the statement is that they wish to make about why they feel they need to come out in support of the Gaza administration, the Hamas administration during this conflict. Antony Blinken, the U.S. Secretary of State, has landed in the last few minutes in Israel, actually. Some pictures coming out showing Gabi Ashkenazi, the Israeli foreign minister, meeting Antony Blinken at the airport, as he has now landed on his first official visit to Israel since taking office as U.S. Secretary of State. And also the very first visit by any senior official from the new Joe Biden administration since they took office. It's unfortunate that it comes against the backdrop that it does. It shows that the Biden administration will be engaging in the issues that relate to the conflict here. And of course, Antony Blinken, by arriving here, has shown not only that the U.S. administration was involved somehow in brokering the ceasefire, but that they seem to have some sort of desire to be involved in creating a different reality moving forward. At least that is the statement that comes from the State Department to explain the purpose of Antony Blinken's visit to Israel. He will also apparently be stopping in Egypt, and he will also hold meetings with Palestinian Authority officials. And his stated intention is simply to try to ensure that the ceasefire holds, that both parties respect the ceasefire, and that you know, a new, more peaceful scenario can be created. His desires are our desires, and I wish him a great deal of success on that mission, which seems to be an almost impossible one, particularly in light of things that we've learned over the course of the last 2 or 3 weeks. But he is here, and of course he will meet with Prime Minister Netanyahu. He will meet with Foreign Minister Gabi Ashkenazi. They will hold joint meetings. They will hold separate meetings. He will also meet with outgoing President Rudy Rivlin before he continues his trip onto other areas. I have absolutely no doubt that the subject of Iran will also be very much on the agenda. And it comes against the backdrop of the announcement yesterday of a new head of the Mossad in the name of David Barnea, who has been described in one of Israel's newspapers as dapper and just very understated. That is the way that he was described, which seems an unlikely description for someone who's taking up such a very senior role and a massive responsibility to take care of Israel's national security. And it also coincides with a statement that Prime Minister Netanyahu made about Iran. And in particular, what he said is that Israel may well be required to go a slightly independent route when dealing with Iran. So that for the very first time is a public statement by the Prime Minister demonstrating that Israel may decide to take actions against Iran which are not necessarily supported by other members of the international community. And might not even be known by other members of the international community. I don't know how far we want to take that statement about independence. I'm expecting that some countries will clearly be briefed, but that Israel is not necessarily now looking to be fully coordinated with the way that other people read the situation. And I think that this is a statement, particularly ahead of Blinken's visit to Israel, where the Biden administration is showing a propensity to engage with Iran, to re-allow Iran the financial and economic means to build its nuclear plant by reducing the sanctions that were imposed by the Trump administration. And I think obviously the Prime Minister and the Israeli government are extremely concerned about that. So a number of different things coming together all at the same time at a very interesting time.
Yeah, it's just an incredible amount of moving parts at the moment. And so many, you know, we saw again another fire that broke out in Iran. We know that that's at play. So many things that are going on at the same time. Israel still hasn't formed a government. What is happening with that?
Well, yeah, the whole government formation process sort of went on ice during the period of Operation Guardian of Walls. And now things have really come back out. And, of course, the period of time that was given for the formation of the government to Yair Lapid by the president has continued to tick in even during the time of the conflict. And there are no indications that the president is inclined to extend the period to the mandate that was given to Yair Lapid because of the conflict that we just went through. But what we're seeing is some interesting backwards and forwards, particularly by Naftali Bennett, who originally seemed to be very firmly in the change camp and has now come out saying that a change government doesn't seem to really be on the table. If we believe what the press is saying about things that are going on behind the scenes, then we understand that the Prime Minister has offered Naftali Bennett a very senior role in a potentially Likud-led government. But we understand that Naftali Bennett has been offered this role together with the seats that he can bring as long as he leaves Ayelet Shaked behind, who has been his partner in crime up until now, and they still seem to be working very, very closely together. But the conditions of the Prime Minister's offer to Naftali Bennett are you need to leave her behind and bring the rest of the people and yourself along. Of course, lots and lots of irony and speculation and a bit of laughter in the public press about this fact, because we do know that Sarah Netanyahu and Ayelet Shaked don't get along very well. There's a black cat that has gone between the two of them. And we do know that, you know, people are speculating that the offer that the Prime Minister has made has effectively been mandated by Sarah Netanyahu because
well,
of
it wouldn't be the first
Ayelet
time.
Shaked. It would probably not be the first time if we believe what we read. And this looks like it probably also won't be the last time if we believe what we read. Some interesting things going on. The problem, of course, is that even if Naftali Bennett joins the Likud-led coalition efforts, they still don't have 61 seats that are now required on their part in order to form a government. Let's remember that the mandate is with is currently with Yair Lapid. He could potentially form a minority government. In other words, he could potentially form a government with less than the required 61 seats as long as when the vote comes to the Knesset for the formation of the government, that a certain number of people who are not within the coalition decide not to exercised their vote against the formation of the government. So what they would loosely call in the business support from outside of the coalition. And that is possible for the person, for the party that has currently got the mandate. However, if another party wishes to try to form a government, if, for example, the Prime Minister feels that he could now, against the backdrop of the operation and with the change in public opinion that we have seen over the course of the operation, if he now feels that he might be able to form a government, he cannot rely on support from outside his coalition. Right. He will need 61 signatures in order to form a government. So he's got a slightly more difficult task than the current holder of the mandate. But if, you know, we were betting people, and I know some of us are, then, you know, Howard, you would just say the writing's on the wall and it's going to be another election, as much as we don't want that to happen. Absolutely. But I think that that still, unfortunately, seems like the most likely outcome. A date sometime in October has already been penciled in as a possible election date. And it's interesting that I think that if there was a vote held today, that the outcome may well be quite different from the previous election,
given that
having been through this current round of conflict and where people seem to have changed their minds.
I happen to think as well that Naftali Bennett did very, very well during this period. I think he came across very well. I haven't been necessarily a fan of his at all, but what I saw in terms of his approach during this time, I was very impressed with. Anthony Wright, unfortunately, we do need to.
I was just going to say one last comment.
Sure.
I'm not sure that everybody agrees with that because of the fact that he's been flick-flacking backwards and forwards. There is speculation that Naftali Bennett may well be completely wiped out were an election to be held today.
Wow.
will leave it at that for now.
It's so fascinating to see difference from outside and within Israel in terms of perceptions.